Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
Welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. This week, we're going to talk to Josh Miller again from Sport Dog, Riverstone Kennels, BritishLabradors.com about more summer dog training tips. We'll check in with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods, and we're going to start with Lance Tang and talk about getting bit by a rattlesnake. What's it like? How much does it cost? He's going to tell us this week here on the show. It's brought to you by Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake, haybaleheights.com. By Lake of the Woods Tourism. Plan your trip to Lake of the Woods today at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. And by Mid-Migration Outfitters, offering guided waterfowl hunts this fall in western Minnesota around that Lac Parle area. Go to midmigrationoutfitters.com.
All right, this is the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Our guest right now, videographer Lance Tangen, available for some freelance videography work if you're looking. He's worked with a number of television shows. I've worked with him with Prairie Sportsman and with Northland Outdoors. And you recently, well, I guess recently, this is what, 2 years ago now that this happened?
No, it's actually just a little
last
over a year.
Last year. Okay. You were filming with Fox Pro. Was that right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. We were filming coyote hunts in the early summer there, I guess, and near Great Falls, Montana. And we had had 4 full days, I think. It was our 4th full day into the trip and pretty much had everything we needed for the show. But we just were kind of getting an extra, you know, coyote or two hopefully called in because things were really working that last morning. And we had just successfully taken a couple coyotes on the last few stands. And then our last stand, we decided to milk it one more and said, we'll do one more before lunch, of course, right? Final words. Well, we were walking in and two other guys that I was with, that I was filming, and then two dogs that were with as well. And the thick of it was, we were walking down a old two track that you could barely tell was a two track. The grass was about knee high. And one of the guys was on the right two track. I was on the left, and actually the dogs had just run in front of me from what I remember down the two track too. And to paraphrase some of it, like, I've been struck at by snakes before. I've been rattled at. I've been around them enough to know, you know. And we were aware of them because the first day we had bumped into one that rattled under a rock, but we never seen it. Never bothered us. We left it alone. So anyway, walking down the trail, and all of a sudden, I mean, I just got struck out of the blue. Got me on my right calf, probably 2/3 the way up. Pretty high, realistically, when you think about it, for what, even with snake boots, it would have been towards the top of some of them. So he just, or she, whatever it was, got me walking through the grass. Man. Never seen it, never rattled. That's just all of a sudden, my visual I have is when I look down my right leg, when I remember it striking, was seeing a body through the grass, and obviously my leg was kicking forward to try to get away from it, but I think the snake was stuck in my leg.
Oh,
so I,
man.
When I leapt, I pulled it and flipped it in the air probably a little bit, and I kind of rolled, and I had about a $80,000, $100,000 camera set up over my shoulder.
Oh my gosh.
And rolled over on that. And then I kind of remember I jumped basically over to the other two track. And when I kind of came up out of the grass, like, what, you know, just happened. Obviously I knew what happened at that point, but looking back at the spot, and all I remember seeing was there was the snake head above the grass, you know, so above knee high, looking around like, who's next? So by that point, the other guys knew, you know, I think it was rattling them at that point after it had already got me, and they knew that I had jumped, and they were asking if it got me. And for whatever reason, I stayed pretty cool. I knew that it had happened, and if you get more excited, that the worse it can be. And I just said, yeah, he got me. I'm just going to start walking to the truck. And in hindsight, if he would have got me really good, the snake would have got me and injected me with more venom. It probably would have been the worst thing I could have done, was actually walking with my leg and getting that venom to circulate throughout my leg. But I did walk back probably the 300 plus yards to the truck, and they dispatched to the snake, and we got out of there. And within 35, 40 minutes, we were actually already in the ER at Great Falls. So,
wow.
Good proximity to an ER and hospital, and, you know, some fast driving, of course, too, helped. But
sure.
That's a situation where you're going to do it. So,
man, bit by a rattlesnake. See, what you're saying is if you're ever in that situation, the number one piece of advice you're going to give to somebody, if you're bit by a rattlesnake, be close to the hospital, right? I mean, get bit someplace close to the hospital. That's not so. You got a bunch of coyotes. You decide, let's do one more. Somebody says, let's do one more. You get bit by a rattlesnake. Do you punch the guy in the throat who said, let's stay for one more at that point?
Well,
like, come on, man.
I think realistically I agreed to it. And I thought to myself, well, since I didn't say no and I could have, then it's just as much my fault sure. as it is anybody else's. So, and at that point, you know, we were all feeling good because we had been having a good morning. So it was what it was.
Well, and you talk about not ever hearing it rattle. And that's, and I've hunted in around rattlesnakes. Fortunately, I've never really been up too close to one. I've never felt like I was in danger of getting bit by one or anything like that. But normally, I mean, I look at it like I keep an eye out for them. And I try not to go near logs, you know, or rocks or someplace where they can hide underneath and you can't see them. But you'd think that you'd hear them rattle before you get up close to them. That's why they rattle. They give you a little bit of warning. Hey, man, you're in my bubble. You're in my personal space here, buddy. Let's get out of here. But you didn't hear it rattle. Do you think you maybe stepped on it as you were walking, or just stepped so close to it that you startled it and it struck? Or what do you think happened?
I guess that's the two theories that have come up. I honestly don't think I stepped on it. I think that maybe that snake was sitting there on that runway, you know, on that two track, you know, it was the least resistance, even though it was really overgrown still. I think maybe it was just sitting on that waiting for a mouse or whatever the case would be. And with, you know, the weight of our boots and the stuff happening around it, it just didn't have time to react. And next thing you know, there's a leg in front of it and or whatever it thought it was, and it struck. So man. Either that or, and maybe I did. Maybe it was just slithering enough trying to get out of the way. And I stepped on it and it recoiled, you know, just out of being stepped on. Like you say, maybe I didn't get much of it, but Lance, one way or another.
Yeah. Lance Tangen, our guest, freelance videographer on Sporting Journal Radio, recounting the time a little over a year ago, got bit by a rattlesnake in Montana while filming for Fox Pro, filming some coyote hunting for Fox Pro. So have you asked Fox Pro for a little bit more money next time you go, next time you go now?
Hazard pay, right?
Right, right.
no, they did do me right and actually offered to help out if anything, you know, above and beyond what I could help cover and medical expenses
nice.
Was there. But
that's great.
Fortunately, you know, never had anything that we weren't able to cover too much. So it all fared well on that end.
So you end up. So you end up in the ER right away. What do they do there?
So they basically just monitored me for probably an hour and a half. And the way I've always described it, I guess, was they shaved both my legs and they put measuring tape around it that they taped on so they could see if my leg was swelling, which it was. And it was pretty tender. I didn't ever look at it until I got to the ER. I figured if it was bad or turning black or something, I might pass out and that wasn't going to help anything. So, it was really red and really tender once they started looking at it, and the swelling did increase. And I remember hearing the list when they read it off to me of all the different symptoms or the signs to watch for. And the last one caught my attention. I think they said something about if you feel like you're chewing on a pop can, or if you have the metallic taste in your mouth. I kind of laughed thinking, you know, what is that? How do you describe that to somebody? Well, I think about an hour into it, all of a sudden, I got that feeling like I was chewing on an aluminum can and, you know, drinking water. I couldn't suffice, you know, wouldn't cure my mouth. And
yikes.
Eventually after feeling that for a little while, I told them, and with the, you know, rise in the, swelling and everything going on, they decided to treat me and administer the antivenom at that point. So from there, of course, I got moved to a different room and the process began.
So they were waiting to find out if it was an actual rattlesnake or if it actually had injected you with venom at that point.
Correct. I think they said that typically 3/4 of the bites will be dry bites.
Okay.
If I remember right, I mean, maybe even more than that are actually dry bites, but that's one of the things they do. And actually, on a side note, the thing they do besides the initial ER treatment, I think, and monitoring process is they don't ever have, at least at the Great Falls Hospital in Montana, but it sounds like the cases normally that they don't actually have somebody that's specialized in snake bites that knows how to deal with it. What they actually do is they correspond and send all my data and information, vital signs, blah, 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 to, I think it's the Poison Control Center. And they must have people on staff that are much more proficient and know what to do. And then they tell them what to do based on my vital signs and things that are they're monitoring. So kind of an interesting side bite to that.
So what happened after that then? How long did it take you to recover? How long did it take for the swelling to go down?
The swelling took probably, I'd say, a good week or so before it wasn't tender afterwards. But it was 32 hours then in the hospital in total. And I guess pretty much what you'd call a short course of antivenin, probably a, I can't remember exactly how many doses, I think it was 6 or 8 different doses of antivenin, which takes a while to make up, and they need to monitor you and do all that and then give you some lesser amounts and wean you off of it. And it's an interesting process, one I don't want to go through again, of course. Yeah, but
I bet. So do you have snake boots now or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Irish Setter. I do some work with them and they quickly sent over a new pair of snake boots that I've worn a bunch and broke in that when I think about it and the costs involved with what the bill was and what a pair of boots like that costs, if you're going to a place that's known for it, I know they might be, you think they're going to be a little more sweaty or something because they don't breathe, but goodness, when you look at what the bill could be compared to a pair of boots, it's well worth it to have in snake country.
Do you want to tell us what the bill is of getting bit by a rattlesnake?
Yeah, I always ask people to guess first how much. So in your head, guess how much.
Man, I don't even know where to start for guessing how much that would be. I'm guessing it's going to be way too low. Don't tell us yet, because I have a feeling the answer is going to be staggering. We'll find out next on Sporting Journal Radio. Plus, Josh Miller from Sport Dog is on the way, and Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
We're back, Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Online, sportingjournalradio.com. We got a new website up. Very easy to listen to the show, podcast the show, and find out where you can tune in across the Sporting Journal Radio network. Our guest, Lance Tangen, freelance videographer. He got bit by a rattlesnake now while filming a predator hunting show with Fox Pro, and he was just about to tell us how much it cost. He asked us to guess, and I don't even know where to start, Lance. $5,000?
Oh, I'd say 10 times more than that. So
no 60, way. What?
62 grand.
Oh, my gosh. Bill. You're kidding me.
No, and 52,000 of it was just for the antivenin.
How much?
52,000.
52,000 for antivenom?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah, snake boots are a worthy investment at that point. I'm getting
yeah,
a snake.
Can
I get a whole snake suit? Can they make me a whole snake suit?
Oh, I think you could sell them if somebody made them.
Wow, that is nuts. So insurance, Hope covered most of that. I bet your premiums went up after.
Well, I mentioned about that we found out all right with, or turned out all right with Fox Pro not having to help out any. But fortunately, the wife and I had our first baby boy here the same year, 4 days into January. And since that happened on the same year with our deductible, it had already been met. So it actually ended up being a total of like $7 that we owe.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That is insane. I think that may be more crazy than the story about getting bit by the rattlesnake.
That's always the capper off the story when I tell it, because people usually have no idea.
Oh, my God.
And I certainly didn't before that either, so.
That is nuts. Well, glad you made it. You think, and you're thinking that maybe only one fang really dug in pretty deep?
Yeah, so after some of that swelling came down and looking at it closer, there was definitely two marks there where you could see that probably both the fangs got me. But one of them, the right one, was deeper. And knowing that the angle came from my right side on the back of my right calf, I'm thinking with that angle that maybe he came in and he got me a lot deeper with the right fang than the left one, maybe just broke the skin and went through a little bit. So they obviously had enough to suspect that I needed the antivenom and needed some treatment. But I think what kind of was corresponding to me was that they figured I didn't get a full dose of venom at all. Otherwise, you can see some videos online of when people's skin and, you know, appendages turn black and things, which is disgusting. So none of that happened to me, but I obviously had enough. And maybe that's just residual on the fangs. I don't know how they do that. So either way.
Man, that is, gosh, that's crazy. Well, I'm glad partial venom injection from the snake, full $52,000 anti-venom injection from the hospital. But at that point, I take it. Holy smokes. That's an amazing story. So I, you know, part of this interview, Lance Tangen, by the way, our guest, freelance videographer, joining us here on Sporting Journal Radio, talking about getting bit by a rattlesnake while filming for Fox Pro about a year ago. I was going to ask, what are some more adventures that you've been on that stick out? But I'm guessing that one is probably at the top of the list.
That one probably definitely makes the most interesting story out of it. I guess some of the unique places, did some couple trips down to Argentina and dove hunting and stag hunting, filming both those type of hunts. And then my favorite, I think, fishing trip. Go ahead, Brett.
Well, I was just going to say, before you get to that, let's talk about Argentina for 1 second, because I went down there too and duck hunted.
That's right.
And I had an absolute blast. It was fun. You got to shoot a pile of ducks, and everybody wants to go to Argentina for dove hunting. And I get it. Doves are fun, but I dove hunt here in Minnesota, and I know it's not anywhere near the same, but once you shoot a couple of doves, it's like, okay, ducks, I just like ducks better. So when I was in Argentina, they talked me in to going dove hunting, and we went perdiz hunting, and that was a lot of fun because that was over pointers, and that was a lot like pheasant hunting or sharp-tail grouse hunting, and I will do that every day if I get a chance. So they took me there and like, okay, now you need to go dove hunting. I was like, all right, let's go. Finally, let's go. He's like, just come. The whole sky turned black. And I'm like, all right, let's go. And I'll tell you what, we dove hunted for maybe an hour and a half. And yep. I literally, at one point, I threw my arms up in the air and I said, I don't know which dove to shoot at right now. There's so many doves winging around, and I blew through, I bet, like 200 shells. And I was like, all right, I get it now. I see the fun of this because there's so much action. There's so many birds. They figure in a 100 square mile area, there was like 14 million doves or something like that. And the farmers, they're pests for the farmers. They eat all the grain. So I understand the need for hunting them down there, and I get the fun of it. So I wasn't sold on dove hunting in Argentina, but after doing it, I can see how much fun it is.
Well, don't let anybody sell you on dove hunting filming, because it's the hardest thing when you gotta pick one out of a sky full of 10,000.
Yeah, and they're tiny. I've tried to film dove hunts before. It's tough.
Really tough. Really tough. So the benefit there is that when you shoot 1,000 in a day, that you're probably going to get 30 or so that might work.
Right. Isn't that crazy that people want to shoot 1,000 in a day? And they do it. It's just nuts to me. Videographer Lance Tangen, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio. We're talking about some of the adventures that he's been on, some of the filming trips that he's been a part of. And he was about to tell us about what is your favorite fishing trip?
Yeah, no, it's been a few years back, but a place called Tropic Star Lodge in Piñas Bay, Panama. It's an amazing place close to Colombia, the border of Colombia. You get there by get there by plane, but then you take a boat around into your own private bay, and it's world class. But inshore, offshore, a lot of, you know, big names come there to fish. I think they have the world record of world records. They have over 300 line class world records.
Wow.
So it's the creme de la creme of fishing places for inshore and offshore. But amazing place and amazing adventure. And actually there's a home tie to that. The guy that I filmed was an individual that was in, I think he was a union bricklayer, if I remember right, but he was the one that saved a bunch of children off of 35W bridge collapse.
Oh, really?
From Minnesota. So kind of a unique tie to me being able to film that all the way down there in Panama with a fellow Minnesotan that he actually welcomed George Bush when he landed with the helicopter to survey the scene. And he was one of the few people that helped a bunch of kids off a bus when everybody else was running away. So
I remember
anyway,
the bus.
Not getting into other stories, but I thought that was unique.
That's very unique. I remember that, how that went out. Now, did you know that he was going to be down there when you went?
I didn't know him, of course, before that, but I knew that it was going to be, I knew his story behind it. I had a friend that filmed his, you know, they had a reveal, they call it, where they surprised the winner with, it was actually like people would submit them and their life stories, and then they would be selected and then they would go. So I kind of knew his backstory from somebody that had filmed with him before that. So I did know the story and I knew he was from Minnesota, but it's funny to think he went all the way down there to film with somebody from your same state.
Right. Can we watch that one from Panama somewhere?
Oh yeah. I believe that's online. It would be called, a show called Escape to the Wild. It was on the old Versus Network before that changed to a different name. And I think you can find that online now. So, yeah, it's called Escape to the Wild, and it would be Tropic Star Lodge.
Lance Tangen, videographer, freelance videographer, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio. If somebody out there is doing a TV show or wants something filmed, you got some time available, you could go do some filming with them?
Definitely, definitely.
How do people reach you?
You know, a lot of it's been word of mouth, through people that I've worked with and production companies that I deal with.
Yeah. I'll just tell people to get a hold of me and I can point them in your direction if they want to reach you.
Yeah. You've got my email and stuff, but,
we'll have to have beers on our birthday that coming up.
Yeah,
this
there you
fall.
Go.
All right, Lance Tangen, appreciate the time. Your Sporting Journal Radio. I know you're going to film for us in August with Prairie Sportsman. So we'll see you in August for sure. And, thanks for the time here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Definitely. Appreciate it, Brett.
Coming up next, we're going to talk to Josh Miller from Sport Dog, and we've got Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods on the way.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bidette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Hi, this is Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online at sportingjournalradio.com, or by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes. You can even download that podcasts app right on your phone and get the show delivered straight to you each week. I'm Brett Amundson. This week's show, of course, brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. We'll talk to Joe Henry about Lake of the Woods. It's brought to you by Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort in Devil's Lake. Lucas Mertens, we check in and get Devil's Lake fishing reports each week here on the show. Also by Mid-Migration Outfitters, offering guided duck and goose hunts in western Minnesota, and dove hunts. We'll start guiding dove hunts coming up at the beginning of September, and of course, spring snow goose hunts as well. Go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. All right, last week we had Josh Miller on the show here. He's with Riverstone Kennels and BritishLabradors.com in western Wisconsin. We talked a lot about summer dog training, and as I told him off the air, I could talk about this stuff all day long. So we kind of ran out of time last week. I wanted to have him back on again this week. So we're going to talk more dog training. And specifically, if you're thinking about getting a puppy out there, we're going to talk about what you should do. What are some of the helpful tips that you can do when you get a new dog or get a new puppy and start working with them and start training with them, and when you should introduce an e-collar, like an e-collar from Sport Dog. And we'll talk about how training with e-collars has evolved over the years and what the new products are that are out there. So Josh Miller, Riverstone Kennels, BritishLabradors.com, back on the show. Thanks for coming back again this week, Josh.
You bet. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So when I got my dog, when she was a puppy, young lab, very energetic, very gung-ho, and me being, we had labs growing up, but especially when you're that first-time dog owner and it's your dog and you're in charge of training it and you're in charge of taking care of it, you almost need the training more than your dog, and it's important to do some research and get yourself acquainted with training methods before you start working with a dog, right?
Oh, absolutely. And really, you think about that, what an intimidating task. And I remember back to the first dog I ever got. And I promise you, I made more mistakes with him than maybe every other dog I've ever had combined. That's not because they don't make mistakes. It's just because I was that mistake prone at that time. And there's a lot of learning. And even if you have whether it's a great book or a DVD or an online program, whatever it is, there are still going to be kind of the bumps and bruises of just learning and understanding your dog and how your dog responds, because there's no cookie cutter program for this. This isn't first grade, second grade, third grade, and just kind of go through the graduation. But it is it can be related to kids, that I believe, where every kid, just like every dog, is going to have their own strengths and weaknesses. And they're going to have different ways that they learn better than others. And we look at teachers, and the great teachers are the teachers that are able to communicate well with all the kids, not just the ones that are their favorite method, and connect with that. And I really believe that's what separates a great dog trainer as well, is that not that you can work with one dog or even five dogs, but that you can work with a wide variety of dogs and be able to communicate and really communicate differently if need be to each of those dogs to really elevate each one of those dogs to their fullest potential.
So what do you recommend? Somebody's out there, they call you up and say, hey, I want to get a puppy and I want it to be a waterfowl dog. I want to take it waterfowl hunting. What do you tell them?
Well, the first thing that I tell them is I would really, really recommend getting with a reputable breeder. And the reason I say that is, and I should preface this with, the first dog that I owned that kind of put me on the map, his name was Easton. And Easton was my best friend for 13 and a half years. My dad had a patient of his that had a litter of puppies, and that's how I got Easton. So this was not a reputable breeding, but I got extremely lucky with everything that he was able to be, especially in spite of me and my lack of knowledge at the time. But as we see so many dogs throughout the course of the year, and in my going on 10-year professional training career now, we've just seen so many dogs from all different walks of life that I can promise you that you are stacking the odds in your favor by really going with a reputable breeder that has not only the credentials but the history to show that they are putting out dogs that are proven dogs that are going to be successful in the game or in the hunting activity that you are wanting to participate in, and making sure that the health certificates are there, and really just kind of being objective with it. I always tell people that if you're talking with a breeder and you're unsure and you're going there to quote unquote just look at puppies, you're going to come home with a puppy. That's just the reality of it. Always do your homework and always check references and really go about, because oftentimes there may be some people listening that go, that seems like a bit overkill for a puppy. But think about it. You're making, God willing, you're making a 15-year commitment.
Yeah.
And not only that, once in a while, we get people go, geez, some of these puppies have just gotten to be so expensive, and or that that there's waiting lists to get these puppies, and I don't want to sit on a waiting list. Oftentimes, the breeders that are doing a very, very good job they have a waiting list for a reason. Or, you know, the puppies are more expensive for a reason. It could be health testing. It could be, you know, the parents. But whatever it is, those people are being successful for a reason. And I think that's really something to look into and to respect, because, again, for a 15-year commitment, it doesn't matter what the cost of that, or what it doesn't matter what the cost is of the puppy up front. I promise you that's the cheapest part of owning that dog in that 15 years.
That's,
you know,
right.
So it's so much better to really put the investment out up front to make sure that you have what you're looking for as far as potentially training, you know, training wise, but then health wise too. You know, we see so many dogs that you know, they just don't come from a reptile breeding, that they have, you know, maybe a retinal disease early on in life or hip dysplasia or something like that. And that's heartbreaking. Yeah. But it's also, you know, the money gets in there too.
Well, especially when they become part of the family, and then to have, you know, I saw it the other day on Facebook. A guy had posted pictures with a sad face, and my dog died unexpectedly, 2 years old. 2 years old. So, okay. So Josh Miller is our guest, Riverstone Kennels and BritishLabradors.com, Sporting Journal Radio. So when I got my dog from the kennel that I went to, at 5 weeks, they have a program where the dog is introduced to live gunfire and live birds. So it's a 2 week class, 2 week course, a 2 week training. You bring your dog back at 5 months and it gets introduced to gunfire. So your dog isn't gun shy, and then live birds, so your dog doesn't get spurred and not want to pick up a live bird ever again. So do you recommend some sort of training like that around that age, or what's really that first bit of training that puppy should get?
Right. So that 5 to 6 month old age, I agree, that's a great time to go and do bird and gun introduction. And if someone is looking at, you know, potentially doing some training, if you don't do anything else, this is worth the time and the investment to do this, is this bird and gun introduction, because everything as far as a bird dog is based off of these two things. If we have a dog that is not crazy about birds, it's going to be hard to have a bird dog. If we have a dog that is gun shy, you're not going to have a gun dog. So there's so many things that can be accomplished. And the reason at that age is that at that point, the dog is starting to kind of come into his own. You know, he's got the legs, he's got the, you know, enthusiasm, he's got the, you know, the drive coming out, but it hasn't, you know, that dog has not lived enough of his or her life to either get in a rut or potentially have bad experiences. You know, 4th of July is always a really scary time for us, and usually the week after, our phone's ringing off the hook with bad experiences that came up. But if your dog can be desensitized to the guns beforehand, we hope to eliminate that. Yeah, on the flip side with the birds, most times that we have a bird shyness is because the way that, you know, the Midwest is just kind of laid out, the first two seasons that you're going to run into are early goose season and pheasant season, which are both the two worst birds that that a dog could be introduced on. And we really want to build that confidence up front. So I really, really believe that that's a great way to really build that foundation and get your dog off to a good start.
Absolutely. I've seen it. In fact, I've got a video from either last fall or the fall before of my dog coming back with a giant, you know, Canada. And that bird is still alive, and it is just beating the crap out of my dog as she's carrying it back. I just felt bad for her, but, you know, she had obviously had the proper training and at this point enough experience with live birds that she's going to win that battle 99.9% of the time. Talking with Josh Miller from Riverstone Kennels in Western Wisconsin, also BritishLabradors.com and Sport Dog too. And I want to talk about the evolution of training collars and where they were and where they've come to, and just kind of dispel some of those myths about dog training collars that are out there. So next week, we're going to have Josh Miller back here on Sporting Journal Radio. Before we go, though, we got Joe Henry. He's going to talk about Lake of the Woods. He's next on Sporting Journal Radio.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman, and if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com.
Listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
It's Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. I'm Brett Amundson, heading back up to Lake of the Woods to check in with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism. And Joe, last week we talked about the catch season for sturgeon opening up on July 1st, and we didn't really talk about how to fish for them.
What you're going to be using is a sinker that's applicable to the current of the Rainy River. And normally in the summer, it's not, you know, rushing real, real hard. 3 ounce sinker, somewhere in there, 3 to 4 ounce sinker is going to be good. And we normally use a flat, no roll sinker. That way it doesn't roll in the current. It just stays put, is what you want. And by the way, all this stuff I'm speaking about, you can pick up at the bait shops up at Lake of the Woods. It's just, they have it all. It's easy to get it there. So use a no roll sinker.
And it's not, I'm sorry, Joe, it's not expensive gear either. So if somebody wants to catch like a genuine trophy dinosaur, it's pretty easy to do, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah, this isn't expensive stuff at all. No, you're talking about a no roll sinker, and then you're talking about a sturgeon rig. And a sturgeon rig basically is about an 18-inch lead with 60-pound test leader material and a 5-aught circle hook. You can buy those pre-made. And literally, you just put your line through the no-roll sinker and tie on the sturgeon rig, and you're ready to roll. And, you know, what you do is you take that 5-aught circle hook and you load it up with either night crawlers or a combination of night crawlers and frozen emerald shiners. Good stink bait.
Sure.
What you do is you go into the holes of the river, and you can fish all different parts of the hole based on perhaps your electronics shows you where the fish are. If you don't have good electronics, you don't trust them, fish the, I don't even fish the top of the hole, the part of the hole that's upriver. I'll start with that, and then I'll fish the middle and then the back end of the hole. Give it, you know, 30, 45 minutes, and then if nothing's rolling in that hole, go to another hole in the river. There's lots of them. And those sturgeon will sit down in those depressions or those holes, and, you know, they'll feed at different feeding windows all day long. And, It's just like fishing catfish or carp on the bottom. I mean, you toss your lure out, you tighten the line up, and you just watch that rod tip to bounce a little bit. And of course, with a circle hook, you don't rear back on that hook. You tighten it up real fast and just pull it tight. What'll happen is that circle hook, if it's a little bit deeper in the sturgeon's gullet or mouth, it'll slide out and hook right in the lips. And it's a very good conservation measure in order to hook those sturgeon.
And that's one thing I wanted to bring up. Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, is when you do catch a sturgeon, handling them is the way you handle them is pretty important.
It is. You know, it's important to be prepared. No different than fishing muskies. You know what? With sturgeon or muskies or any big fish, you want to be ready to roll. And that means you have your pliers ready. You have your camera ready. You have a big enough net. You have perhaps a cradle. Some people use a noose almost to like last through the tail and pull them in that way. But you have things ready to roll. And then with any big fish, you really don't want to hold them by the gills. You don't want to touch their eyes. You don't want to hold them vertically. They're so big that their internal membranes and their internal organs can actually tear if you hold them, you know, vertically. So what you want to do with the big fish is support the weight of the belly and hold it horizontally. And that's the best conservation measure. And then and just make sure that, you know, once you get a good picture, that when you release that fish, just you know, you want to kind of go sideways in the water. You don't want to necessarily take that fish and pull it back and forth and back and forth. That can actually drown them. What you want to do is get it in the water upright, support them, and then wiggle them back and forth, just kind of back and forth, and eventually they'll come to and swim away.
There was a new catch and release record set this spring up there, wasn't there?
There was, yeah. There actually was. And, you know, so Well, in fact, it's kind of cool because the DNR came out with catch and release records for sturgeon. So, yes, there was a record set that beat the previous two records up on the Rainy River in the Lake of the Woods area. And it's going to get beat again. I mean, I constantly hear or see pictures of people that have caught big sturgeon that didn't remember to bring a measuring tape and a camera with them. So what I would recommend is if you're going up there fishing, it'd be fun just to take a look at that DNR website to say, all right, exactly what do I need? All right, I need a couple pictures. I need a witness. And you need to measure the length and the girth of a sturgeon and record that information. You send it in with pictures, and they'll verify it. And which that's kind of a cool way to get a state record. That fish is still living.
Right. Yeah, I thought that was great when the DNR came out with catch and release records for what they do. Sturgeon, was it just sturgeon or muskie, or was it sturgeon, muskie, flatheads maybe?
Yeah, sturgeon, muskies, and I'm not sure if it's pike or not. I don't recall.
Yeah, I can't remember. Well, sturgeons are the one, obviously, we're concerned with up there on the Rainy River. Talking with Joe Henry, Lake of the Woods Tourism, right now on Sporting Journal Radio. And will the resorts up there, if a guy wants to go up and say, you know, I want to catch, of course, a bunch of walleyes. I want to eat some. I'd love to catch a trophy walleye. But, hey, I kind of want to go after one of those big sturgeon. Will they do some combo trips up there?
They do, yeah. So some of the resorts will actually, like, if you have a group large enough, they'll actually take you and do combo trips, whether it's sturgeon or walleyes or whatever. The other option would be there are some guys that work with the resorts that they have smaller boats, and they're a little bit more versatile. So they can actually, you know, run you up the river on those smaller boats, and they can do a combo trip of pike and bass and sturgeon and walleyes. And so, yeah, there's a lot of options that way. And I'll tell you, I mean, if it was me, too, the other thing is, if you bring your own boat up, you know, it's easy fishing the Rainy River. I mean, there's 42 miles of navigable river. There's a lot of holes to fish. There's sturgeon through all different stretches. And, you know, a lot of it's just going out and just doing it. So a person could literally go up there and fish 2-3 days walleyes and maybe take a day and fish sturgeon just for fun.
Now, with the Rainy River and the international border running down through the middle of it, do you recommend guys have some sort of electronics or GPS so they can tell where they are on the river? Or what are the regulations regarding where you fish on the river nowadays?
What is shoreline to shoreline, and then halfway between is the international border line. So, you know, most GPSs have a line that show you the border, of Canada. Otherwise, you just know that it's halfway across the river from shoreline to shoreline. And, you know, there's a lot of holes that you don't even have to get close to the middle of the river. And if you don't have electronics that show you where that line is, then I would just say, just make sure you pick a hole that's clearly on the Minnesota side. And there's nothing to worry about. You know, the river is wide enough that you can fish the Minnesota side with no worries if you want to. Of course, I'll get out there and I'll find some structure or a hole or something that's right in the middle of the river, and I'll be watching my the position of my boat where the line is, and I'll be fishing that way. But yeah, there's a lot of ways to get her done, but really it's not a big worry, you know.
Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about catching a record sturgeon on the Rainy River. And right now the keep season is open. Doesn't mean you have to keep one, but if you wanted to keep one, you have to get a special tag, right? So your fishing license for Minnesota covers you to fish for them, but if you wanted to keep one for the season, you have to go buy a tag?
Yep, you buy a sturgeon tag for $5, and then if your desire is to keep one, you have to catch a sturgeon between 45 and 50 inches or over 75 inches. And then if you do catch that fish, what you need to do is tag it, then you need to report it into the DNR. I believe it's within 24 hours, and you need to leave you know, really the head and everything intact so they can measure it. You can gut it, but you just have to leave the head intact. So you can gut it and gill it. You know, so it's kind of a neat opportunity for people if they want to catch it. You know, most people do catch and release, quite honestly. And the big allure with sturgeon, I mean, I know people that really do target keeping them because they love the meat so much, whether it's smoked or whatever. But most people are going to go up there and do catch and release. And yeah, it just, I mean, to get the feel the strength of a sturgeon. If you haven't caught a sturgeon, you know, and that's why a lot of times too, people will fish with the right kind of gear. They'll use musky gear if they have that, or heavier rods and reels. Heck, you can pick up like catfish gear at yep. department stores and things for really reasonable. Cheap. Fiberglass rods, big reels, throw a 60-pound test on there and have at her. But it's more of a conservation effort too for the sturgeon, because you don't tire them out so darn much compared to, you know, catching one on, let's say, walleye gear.
Yeah, it's but those guys do catch them on walleye gear when they're fishing in the spring, and that's kind of a fun fight as well too. Joe Henry, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio. So, how long does that keep season go on the Rainy River? How long does the sturgeon fishing season this portion of it go?
Yep, you know the keep season started July 1st and it goes through September 30th, and then the catch and release season goes on, you know, past that. So. And they have different, when you look at the sturgeon regulations online, there's different time periods where it's a keep season and then a catch and release season. And then the closed season is typically the second half of May and June. That's what we just ended.
Okay, sure. Do people target them much in the winter?
You know, not a lot, but there have been some people that have gone on the Rainy River and targeted sturgeon. And, you know, I know Jamie Dittman had tried it and all he could catch was walleyes doing it.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, I know that there have been some videos made where people went out there with really heavy ice fishing rods and reels and targeted sturgeon, and they got them. And in some of that fishing even took place at night. They went out there when it was dark out and did it, and it was a really cool-looking video. I mean, those fish, imagine catching one through the ice. I've got them through the ice before accidentally fishing walleyes on the lake. And, you know, I mean, I had one time where it was just a prime time. It was a golden hour, and I had a big red mark coming on my Vexlar. And I put my jigging spoon on there and jig, held it still, jig, boom, popped it, set that hook. Freaking rod broke. I literally broke my rod. So I handed the reel off, opened the bail, and started pulling it in with my hand. It took me 45 minutes to get it in, and it was a big sturgeon, about a 50-incher.
Wow, which is kind of cool, and it's a neat story, but at the same time, you probably figured that was about a 12-pound walleye or something.
Well, when I broke my rod on that hook set, I was pretty excited, you know, but I was hoping, okay, first be a big walleye, be a monster, be that state record. And then I'm like, okay, pike or muskie. Or sturgeon, pike or muskie or sturgeon, or monster eel pout,
yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, after I couldn't get it off the bottom, I assumed it was a sturgeon, and it indeed was. And, hey, there's another time I caught a sturgeon through the ice, and it was really funny because I had this thing on, and I could not budge it off the bottom. So I had my brother and my sister with me, and so we're kidding my sister, and we kid around with her so much. I said, Patty, here, come just feel the power of this fish. And she tried lifting that head up, and it wouldn't come off the bottom, and she looked at me, and she goes, You're joking with me. You're snagged, or somebody has your line from another hole. Something's going on. This isn't a fish. So 45 minutes later, when we got the sturgeon up, her eyes popped out of her head.
Wow. You know? Fun fish. Underrated, in my opinion. And if people want to go up and try it for themselves, Joe, whether they want a sturgeon fish or sturgeon fish and walleye fish, where can they find out more info?
Check out our website. It's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.